Welcome everyone to the Region 5 Planning and Policy Council meeting. My name is Kirby Fye. If you're logged in under WebEx, it shows me as Amy Holland, but I'm Kirby Fye with the department.
Kirby.
Just a few housekeeping things. If you don't mind, please mute your phone or your computer unless you're presenting or need to ask a question. Also, please wait until the end of a presentation to ask a question. This meeting is being recorded and it will be posted to the department website within the next day or so per Governor Lee's Executive Order 51. So just want you all to be mindful of that. I'm going to go through the attendance that I have here, and then Debbie, we can even do another check-in at the end if anybody's called in after attendance was taken, just for your minutes. So like I said, my name is Kirby Fye. I'm here with the department. On the line, I see Debbie Hillen, Adrian Doakes, Amber Hampton, Avis Easley, Henry Moore Jr., Kimberly. What's your last name, Kimberly?
Ladd.
Hi, Kimberly. I have Kubra Urkel Bryant, Kurt Hipple, Marianne Christian, Melissa. Is that you, Melissa Sparks? Yep. I see Pam. Pam, what's your last name? Hello? You might be on mute, Pam. There you are.
Okay. No, it's Nelson.
Thank you. Hi, Pam. I have Sherry Allen, Zach Blair, and then I have Jennifer Armstrong. Are you on the call? I see someone called in. Is on here with a CI number.
Hi, yes, good morning. I just joined, Amy.
Hi, Jennifer.
Or Kirby, I'm sorry.
It's okay. And then I have two members that called in. Can you please state your name on the line?
This is Dr. Carol Cherich.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. And I see one other person that called in.
Must be me, Barbara Ann Nelson.
Oh, hi, Barbara.
Hey, I might not be able to stay on this whole thing, but I'm tuning in as much as I can. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for joining. Okay, Debbie, I'm going to hand it over to you.
All right. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for your time and for joining us this morning. Sherry had sent out the minutes. And I would entertain a motion to accept the minutes. It can be anyone.
Hi, I accept the minutes.
Okay, and who?
Carol Cherich accepts the minutes.
Okay, is there a second?
I make a second. This is Mary Ann.
Thank you, Mary Ann. All in favor signify by saying aye. I guess the best way is if you oppose, say so. Otherwise, we'll assume they've passed.
Debbie, who made the original motion?
Carol Cherich, Cherich.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Now, I understand that Jennifer has another commitment at 10, so I'm going to change the agenda just a little, and Jennifer is the Director of Crisis Services for the department, and Jennifer, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you so much, Debbie. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Thanks so much for having me. Melissa's also on the call, and I know that the intent is to give kind of an update on where we are in terms of crisis services and in the midst of the pandemic. So I'll update, and then Melissa, anything that you want to add, please feel free to jump in. As you can imagine, it's been, for everybody, just unprecedented in terms of figuring out how to deliver services effectively, efficiently, and more than anything, safely. So we've been keeping our finger on the pulse with our with our crisis providers via weekly, initially kind of daily. We've moved to weekly and now biweekly kind of update touch points. We've worked with our community-based medical director to really, really push out the use of telehealth and provision of services. I think, you know, there's not a lot of positives that have come from the pandemic, but I think one, if there is anything to be said, the efforts around telehealth implementation have really been moved forward at the speed of light. So we're almost 100% telehealth capable in our ERs. And again, we've been kind of taking and working to break down barriers, whether it be needing equipment, whether it be, you know, getting, you know, onboarding the medical team within the ERs. But it's going really well. Also on the jail front, we've been successful with getting the majority of our jails telehealth capable. We continue to work with our providers closely to hopefully become 100% telehealth capable. As you can imagine, it's really, really helped with response times. I know initially there was concern around, you know, the quality of the clinical assessment virtually or via telehealth, and that really hasn't. We've kept an eye closely on that, and there, you know, have been no concerns. I think that if anything, I hope this is we are hoping to continue to push this. All of our community partners seem to really love it. So, if anything that's come good out of this pandemic, it has been that we're able to serve more clients more efficiently and safely. And keeping the patients and our team safe. In terms of volume, initially, well, I'll speak to two sides. You know, we have our Tennessee statewide crisis line that we publicize across the state, and we have a great web presence. In March, when the onset of the pandemic, we did see kind of a spike in crisis inquiries, a number of calls specific to that. The crisis line, and since that time, has gone back down to kind of normal in terms of where it has been historically by month, year over year. In terms of our actual calls to our crisis providers, their local crisis line numbers, and also the number of face-to-face requests, that really kind of initially went down. For the most part, either stayed the same or went down. But what we did find was that of those that did, you know, meet criteria for an actual face-to-face assessment for a possible hospitalization or higher level of care, we did see an increase in acuity. So of those face-to-faces, we did see a little less diversion because of the acuity. We got more, as you can imagine. The majority of our calls were from ERs, folks walking in. So in terms of people reaching out via the crisis line, it was really just anxiety around what's going on, pandemic. On the mobile crisis and crisis provider side, it was kind of less in terms of those asks, but more acute presentations. I think that's really one thing that we did roll out, and I'll let Melissa speak to this in terms of, well, two things is we worked to create kind of a medical clearance checklist. So that when it's appropriate, we can bypass use of ER to get folks where they need to be more quickly. And then we also implemented a smart form that I know Melissa was heavily involved in creation of both of those processes and the rollout. So Melissa, if it's okay, I'll have you speak to those two things. Or anything else that you'd like to add?
We can't hear you, Melissa.
Probably help if I took myself off mute.
Well, and I did not want to overlook you in the introductions because I knew your name was there. For those of you who don't know her, and most of you do, this is Melissa Sparks. She's the Deputy Assistant Commissioner for the Division of Hospital Services. She used to be over crisis services, and she and I have had many conversations over the year about crisis services. So, Melissa, welcome, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. One thing that I would add to what Jen said is that we have had to limit our capacity at the crisis stabilization units to allow for social distancing. So that too has impacted diversionary resources that are available. So that combined with the acuity, we have seen more individuals needing inpatient hospitalization than normal. We actually tracked that by quarter, and during the last quarter, April, May, and June, we really saw a spike in hospitalization rates. And that in and of itself has been challenging because many hospitals have been requiring negative COVID tests. And as hard as we have tried to divert asymptomatic individuals from the ER, we have found that in many cases we've had to instruct them to go to an ER to get that COVID test before we could get access to an inpatient psychiatric bed. And of course, in some places that test result has taken some time. For a while there in certain areas, it seemed like some folks had access to quick test results, but through my participation with other private psychiatric hospitals across the state, I'm hearing that everyone now is struggling getting access to those quick test results. And so we saw a longer length of time in the ER as it relates to trying to get the results back. It went from being 1 to 2 days to being like 5 to 7. And of course, we have many efforts in place to try to help our ED partners because we recognize the challenges that having a large volume of behavioral health clients in an ED at one time can create. So we've certainly worked really hard. And one of those things, as Jen mentioned, is the SMART medical clearance process. This is a process that was actually developed in California. It is an evidence-based process, and it is really designed to try to streamline the medical clearance process as it relates to transferring to a psychiatric inpatient facility. That is really still being rolled out. We presented to as many folks as we could near the end of June to kind of kick it off. And as Jen mentioned, Dr. Herman, our community-based medical director, has been working hard with those ERs who seem to either have not have heard of it or have not yet quite decided whether they're going to adopt it. The RMHIs have graciously agreed to accept that as medical clearance, but the process itself is only going to be as good as how many ERs choose to adopt it and how many psychiatric inpatient facilities choose to adopt it. But if everybody adopted it, it would really make things much easier for mobile crisis, because right now many of the facilities have different medical clearance criteria, and they've got to try to keep up with, okay, this hospital needs this, this hospital needs this. It would just really streamline things for them as well. So we're really excited about that. We have been working closely with our crisis providers to make sure they can continue their duties while maintaining safety. So we did issue recommendations for response as it relates to COVID. So telehealth is their primary way of utilizing that, not to say that they aren't still going out to do face-to-faces when they absolutely need to. If they're unable to do telehealth, we were able to get an executive order, governor's executive order in place that would allow, if telehealth is unavailable, they can do a phone assessment with the client in order to issue a certificate of need. That is temporary right now. That executive order is set to expire August the 31st, but we'll see how things look at that point in time. That has been a big value to the crisis delivery system, and I've been monitoring the quality of those assessments pretty closely to make sure that a phone assessment is not resulting in a poor quality assessment as a compared to a face-to-face, and so far have not found any evidence that the quality has suffered. Also have not gotten any complaints from the RMHIs, and believe me, they would let me know if their crisis assessment suddenly went down in quality. So I feel pretty confident that what we're using is effective. If they are unable to do telehealth or a phone assessment, only as a very, very last resort have we allowed them to do what is called a call through, and that is essentially a consult with a CON writer that's on location with the client. But they have to vet those very closely, because we have seen many call throughs come to our state facilities that were really inappropriate. I see you checking your temperature.
just don't go ahead and done it yet.
And you don't have a fever, do you?
Nope.
Okay, good. Of course, when they're doing a call through, if the CON writer does not agree with the need, or the CON writer refuses to rescind the CON, then there's not much that crisis can do, because legally, as long as it's a doctor or psychologist writing that CON, pardon me, then legally they have the authority to do that. But we do ask crisis to notify the RMHI if they don't agree with the need for hospitalization. And they also provide recommendations for what they would recommend should the person be a non-admit. Now, as Jen was mentioning, telehealth and how we're using that in crisis, we've also expanded telehealth connections with our state hospitals, which has been a great, huge value as well. We started this with one connection directly between an RMHI and an ER. And now I think we're up to 85 connections between state hospitals and ERs and jails across the state. And the value that brings really is that our law enforcement partners don't have to transport unnecessarily, because we do see about a 35% non-admit rate in general across the state. And it allows better discharge planning of that individual. And it also prevents them from having to ride in the back of a cop car to get to the hospital. So it really is a win-win situation. It also allows our admissions offices to process individuals a little quicker, so we aren't seeing quite as bad of a delay in getting to an RMHI. So we do frequently update those crisis recommendations that I mentioned. In fact, I'm getting ready to release a new updated version of that includes requirements to wear eye protection based on the most recent CDC recommendations. They're actually already doing that because we made sure they were aware of that change at the time that it occurred. It's just taken me a little time to actually update the recommendations. But all in all, we're still seeing the same volume of folks come into our walk-in centers. Of course, they put, you know, special screening precautions in place, just like many of you, to check their temperature, to ask those screening questions. Of course, we all know now that there's so many positive asymptomatic people out there that there's still no guarantee that you're not taking somebody in that is positive, because we are not testing everybody. We're just simply screening. Now, at our RMHIs, we have just gotten to the place where we can do on-site testing. So I'm hopeful that will help again increase admission throughput and decrease delays that might be experienced for somebody that needs inpatient services. And outside of that, you know, I mentioned that we have decreased capacity at the CSUs right now. But with the beds that they do have available, they are pretty much keeping those full. So we're just very pleased and proud that we have managed to get through this. We have actually seen more positive staff than we have patients, which is interesting, that both our state hospitals and in crisis, it seems that we have had more positive staff members than we have patients. And of course, that places its own burden on the system, because if you've got a lot of staff out at one time, you got to find a way to keep your services operating with limited number of staff members. But, you know, we've been very lucky and fortunate, and I think a lot of it has to do with the great screening that Crisis is doing and just putting in those precautions to make sure we're social distancing, wearing our masks, and that kind of thing. I think that's all I have. Did I miss something, Jim?
No, you did awesome. Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks. I'll open the floor up for any questions for Jennifer and Melissa.
Hey, Melissa, this is Amber Hampton. I have a question for you about the evidence-based protocol that you were talking about out of California. What does that look like?
It's a process that walks the physician through all the different things that they should evaluate if they have a mental health client. I'll be happy to share that. It's also available on THA's website. If you go down to the bottom of THA's main page, there's a little thing down there that I think it says behavioral health. And if you click there, you can go find medication protocols that have been developed to help our ER partners, the SMART form, the FACTS, the FAQs for that SMART form, and several other resources can be found there. But I'm also happy to send that to Kirby and ask her to send it out to everybody if anybody wants to see that.
You know, that would be awesome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much.
I had actually made a note here. I was going to ask you about that. So, Amber, thank you for asking that.
We'll make sure you get it, the form and the FAQs.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of Melissa or Jennifer?
Miss Debbie, this is Kimberly Ladd. I kind of do have a question, but I don't know. I know that this is ER related. I have a question on evidence-based protocols for mental health and behavioral needs of people coming through courtrooms, just whenever that would be an appropriate time to ask that.
Go ahead and ask. These two ladies may have an answer for us.
Oh, that would be great. I'm curious. We have a brand new judge. I'm sorry, this is Kimberly Ladd with Maury County Prevention Coalition. And of course, one of the large topics that we champion is trauma-informed continuum of care for people in our system of care. And we have a judge that seems to be new to our county that he's on, or she's on rotation now for our district. And in a courtroom proceeding, there was an opportunity for this person who has done really well in our jail's local restoration program. She had an opportunity to go to a great treatment facility, but was instead sent to prison. And this particular judge does not seem very receptive to recovery. And does not seem to understand the science of addiction and recovery. So I'm curious to know what evidence-based protocols that we have for people that come through our courtrooms.
You know, one of the individuals I think that would be, and any of the states can correct me here, is that if you would contact Ellen Abbott.
Okay.
She is over the criminal justice programs for the department.
Okay.
And she hand works with each of these judges and helping them to understand addiction and why you need to send them to treatment services versus sending them to jail just to lock them up.
Okay,
so,
great.
If you would contact the department and ask for Ellen Abbott. Well, as a matter of fact, hang on a minute. I'll see if I can get her office phone number here right quick for you. Ellen. Ellen is all criminal justice. All right.
Awesome.
Her work phone is 615-253-7837.
Great. Thank you, Debbie.
And the other thing is, her name is going to escape me, Pam Scott.
Wonderful. Yeah, Ms. Pam Scott, indeed. I haven't even had a chance. She's actually our co-chair on our board.
Well, Pam has been the criminal justice liaison to the courts down there in the jails.
Mm-hmm.
She recently with Centerstone took a position called Tennessee 10 Rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also a diversion as it relates to criminal justice. It's not a full-blown drug court, if you will, per se, but there's a lot of similarities. So you might also reach out to Pam.
Yes, ma'am, I definitely will. Thank you so much, Miss Debbie.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments?
I think Jennifer needs to get off the phone, so maybe she already has. I know Melissa will stay on and help with questions, but if we wanted to say goodbye to Jennifer.
She's actually already dropped off.
All right. Again, thank you both very much for the information. I know some of the information that you put out, Melissa, you and Jennifer, ties back into a recent incident regarding the Navigators. And those of you at the state, and some of you on the phone know me well, I don't do well when I get a call from the state. And so, yeah, Melissa's laughing. And if I could see Kurt, he would be laughing. I know that. But I got a call that one of the hospitals.
Sorry, that was me laughing.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, you're muted, but I still hear you laughing. But it involved someone, and when I chased it down, it involved someone presenting at an ER that they had done a 6404, but the hospital staff, so I don't know what was going on over here with the CSU. I don't know what was going on with the mobile crisis. I don't know what was going on at MTHI, but what was told to my staff was that if you'll get them in treatment, we'll waive the 6404. And they turned them down because it was the 6404. And we knew that we were not the appropriate facility to handle that level of acuity for a mental health situation. And they didn't particularly like our answers. So a lot of what you just said, Melissa, makes a lot of sense because of the social distancing. The CSUs are not able to, maybe this person would have been more appropriate for a CSU to get them stabilized and then us take them or whatever, or even to go out to the institute. But I think we just learn with what's going on. And what I put in my response was, we're just doing the best we can. This is an unmapped course. And whatever has come down that, well, you can see part of my desk here, is that it may change before this meeting is over with. So everybody just kind of has to roll with what's going on now and be assured that everybody, all providers, are doing the absolute best they can with what's going on and for that point in time, because it may change tomorrow. I mean, I can see how many times I've rewritten policy since COVID hit.
Yes.
And so, anyway, speaking of COVID.
I wanted to say something, though, about that, Debbie, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
Because we have seen an increase in substance use as well, and we often in crisis encounter an individual who says, if I can't get treatment or substance use help today, I'm going to kill myself. And I don't know if that's anything like the situation you were just talking about, but we are seeing quite a bit of that. And in those cases, you know, it might be more appropriate to try to get them into treatment
That and we do that, Melissa. And that's, I don't think you'll find any issues with that, because they've learned the right buzzwords to get somebody's attention. And there's no problem with those. But no, this one had mental, when they did send us the paperwork, there was clear mental health issues that was beyond our scope. Now we get those calls all the time and we take those. Those are no big issues.
Good to know. And then you're going to talk about COVID.
Yeah, I wanted to just put the discussion out there for COVID before I, and I know Kurt and Zach are on the phone. So if y'all will just bear with us, I'd like to talk, since we're already on the COVID thing, is what are y'all thinking out in the district? What are we seeing out? What are we seeing out in the community, and what do we need to be addressing, and how can we better address what is going on? I did see a news thing the other day, and Kurt, you and Zach, and even Melissa, some of you may be able to respond. I didn't hear the full thing, but they were talking about the increase in COVID in the rural communities. Of course, you know, Region 5 is all rural. And so I watched the numbers in Lawrence County because my parents, my 90-year-old parents, live in Lawrence County. My mother says we have them in jail. Julie, my daughter, who's an RN, she says, well, y'all got me in jail. I can't go nowhere. So I track the COVID rates there. And there has been an uptick. Wayne County has had a major uptick. What's some of y'all's thoughts? What do you think we could? Somebody,
Kurt, you might want to mute.
Hello, this is Carol Cherich.
Carol, hang on a minute.
Sure.
There was a lot of background there. I think it has stopped now. So go ahead, Carol.
Hi, this is Carol Cherich, and I live in Clarksville. And I am a clinician. I'm licensed in both mental health and addictions. And what I've noticed is, particularly people, whether it's substance, many people have co-occurring disorders.
Yes, ma'am.
And so that's what I'm working with more now, but more recently, I feel like a case manager, like trying to help those people access the resources. And the people I work with are mostly on an outpatient basis, unless I need to refer them somewhere. But most of the people I'm working with are outpatient basis. And the thing that I'm still learning is accessing those resources. And I find that oftentimes people don't know where those resources are. And I guess what I was looking for was maybe a list of all of those resources, like a cheat sheet that, you know, maybe that could be emailed to us so that I can quickly go to those resources and give people to the resources that they need. And I work with a lot of military at Fort Campbell, and it's the same thing even with the soldiers. It's the family members who don't know where those resources are. So that's a very strong interest of mine. I really appreciate you all being online today to have these conversations. So thank you.
Carol, can you define when you say resources, that's a whole big picture? Can you kind of define, narrow down what you're looking for?
So what I mean by that is just like a hotline. I know I used to work at SAMHSA, so I'm kind of familiar with SAMHSA stuff. But the local things in, say, Tennessee, those numbers in the different counties. So there would be crisis lines, maybe financial issues, those sort of general things. Because what I'm doing is all of the clinical, but those referral resources, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's still a big picture. All right, who started to say something?
I was just going to ask Carol's last name.
It is C-H-E-R-I-C-H.
Now, for a crisis line, Melissa, can you give that number out? Because I know that's off your head.
We've got a statewide crisis line. So no matter where you are in the state, you can get connected to a provider. And that number is 855-CRISIS-1 or 2. I always have to pause when I try to crisis one.
So it's just 855-CRISIS. I'm sorry?
Yes, crisis one or 2747471.
74741? Is that correct?
855-CRISIS-1 or 2747471.
All righty. Thank you.
And Carol, through TADAS, the Tennessee Association of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Services, they have a Tennessee Red Line that's funded by the department to help people locate treatment resources. And that number is 1-800-889-9789. And it's answered 24/7 as well.
Okay, good.
And then, I'll give you Buffalo Valleys. We actually are in Clarksville also. 800-447-2766, and you'll get that automated system. Just hit 0, and it'll give you a live person.
Okay, thank you.
I'm not for sure. There used to be a little resource directory from involving what goes on in Clarksville. I know if someone is homeless, so let me do this one. You can call the City of Clarksville, the Planning and Development, and there is a person there that if you tell them you're calling about homelessness, they will be able to direct you there by calling the city office there, City of Clarksville, Planning and Development.
Do you have their number by any chance?
I have the director's cell phone, so no, I don't have the main number.
Oh, no problem. Sure, thank you.
All right, other comments?
The department's website also contains a lot of resources.
It
if
does.
You ever had a moment to browse that.
And what is that website, please?
You just type in Tennessee Department of Mental Health Substance Abuse, it'll take you straight there.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other comments as it relates to COVID? I've got about 20 staff members under observation, and you're right, Melissa, it is a trick because like the institutes and like we are, and a lot of the others here on this phone are considered essential providers. So that doesn't mean we've had a hard time telling our staff, you just can't go home and wait. You're an essential provider. And if you're been exposed and you're asymptomatic, you need to do self-monitoring, but you can still show up for work. And luckily for me, when this last one hit where I was exposed, it was actually somebody who had tested negative, We waited the 10 days, no symptoms. We let her come in for a meeting. The next day, she started having symptoms. So it's been tricky. The hardest part, I think, has been dealing with the staff emotions and trying to reassure them. And even using some of the flu, you know, and just making references. So any other questions and comments? I'll ask you this. I got to write a new policy on face masks. Anybody got a good policy on the use of face masks? Because I got to write one. Can you share it?
I'm sure I can.
That would be
I also have Park Ridge's face mask policy I can share.
That would be awesome. Thank you. All right. I'd like to at this time Zach wants. He's not on the agenda, but Sherry sent me a text that, Zach, if you're with us, would you please share a legislative update with us?
Good morning. I am here. Thank you, Debbie. Always good to see you in this group. The legislative summary was published last week. Typically, that would have been done several weeks earlier, but unfortunately, due to the strange nature of the legislative session this year, didn't finish up until middle of June, and so it took several weeks for all the bills to be enrolled, signed, public chapters to be issued. So unfortunately, took a little bit longer to publish this year, but we're happy that it's done. And when I refer to the strange nature of legislative session, You probably saw that the General Assembly had to adjourn in the middle of March for several weeks, and then they came back and met again in June, which is unusual. They typically go from January through April or May and then adjourn for the year. But instead, this year, they went through the second week of March, or maybe the third week of March, and adjourned until June 1st. So it was a strange year all around. It continues to be a strange year no matter what we do, and we're trying our best to be flexible and adapt to that. So I believe the legislative summary was distributed to all the members at some point in the last week, and if you've got the document open and are following along, I'll reference the page numbers, but please know that you can access that on our website. I'm sure Kirby has sent a link to that, and look at it at your convenience. But I'll touch on a couple of bills, and if anyone has questions about the legislative session in general or any of the bills that are listed on here, I'll be happy to go into more detail. But on page one of the legislative summary under the mental health related legislation, I'll call your attention to the last item, House Joint Resolution 1. This was not a bill, but rather a policy statement or a position by the General Assembly that recognizes teen suicide as a health crisis in Tennessee. And I know folks that work in this area are very aware of the difficulty we've had with youth and young adult suicide in Tennessee, and the General Assembly recognizing that as a public health issue in Tennessee, hopefully is a very important step in moving forward to continue to address that in the future. So something that I'll call your attention to on that particular portion of the summary. Under the substance abuse and controlled substances related legislation, starting on page two, I'll start with Senate Bill 2202, House Bill 2269, now Public Chapter 732. This aligns state law with the federal law regarding the minimum age to purchase tobacco products. And that's important for our department due to our requirement that we work with the Department of Agriculture to enforce They are the enforcement agency, but we work with them to ensure compliance for underage sale of tobacco products for retailers throughout Tennessee. And a lot of folks are not aware of this, but our substance abuse block grant funding that we give the federal government is tied to the compliance rate for tobacco, underage tobacco sales in the state. So we participate with the Department of Agriculture to make sure that that compliance rate is kept up to a certain standard so that our funding for the substance abuse block grant is not in jeopardy. And the Department of Agriculture needed this change to continue to enforce the law, specifically on the federal change. So we will continue to be able to put our state in a good position to ensure that we receive that block grant funding and make sure that retailers are being responsible when they sell tobacco products. Senate Bill 2552, House Bill 26, now public chapter 747. The Departments of Health, Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, and the TennCare division within the Department of Finance and Administration to develop educational materials for providers and facilities where controlled substances are prescribed for these medication-assisted treatment. And the idea behind this piece of legislation was to make folks aware of neonatal abstinence syndrome, educate women of childbearing age, women that might become pregnant or are pregnant, and the concerns about neonatal abstinence syndrome and the importance of maintaining proper care and understanding the impact of substances on pregnancy. So we will be working with those other sister agencies to develop those materials and make those available to providers and practitioners who prescribe certain medications for medication-assisted treatment. So two of the biggest that make impact on substance abuse treatment in Tennessee, they're two very similar pieces of legislation, and I'll do my best to differentiate the two. But starting out with Senate Bill 1060, House Bill 656, now public chapter 761. This is a bill that expands the scope of practice for nurse practitioners and physician assistants in community mental health centers, federally qualified health centers, and allows those practitioners to prescribe buprenorphine for the use in medication-assisted therapy. This is the first time that expansion of practice has happened in Tennessee. We were the last state to allow nurse practitioners and physician assistants to be able to prescribe buprenorphine. And so this is a pretty big change. And again, this is in the setting of community mental health centers and federally qualified health centers. But there are several limitations that I've tried to highlight in the summary. You have to be working under the direct supervision of a physician who has an active DEA waiver, a data waiver, from the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and that physician is actively treating patients with buprenorphine. The prescribing nurse practitioner and physician assistants who decide to do this also has to obtain and hold active data 2000 waivers from the DEA. The supervising physician is only permitted to supervise four nurse practitioners or physician assistants at a time, and nurse practitioners and physician assistants who do prescribe the buprenorphine are only allowed to prescribe to 50 or fewer patients at one time. So there are other limitations in the bill. Those are some of the highlights. But again, this is a big change considering the nurse practitioners in the state and physician assistants in our state were not permitted to prescribe buprenorphine previously. Moving on to the next. Yes, ma'am.
Can I ask, I think you mentioned mental health centers and you mentioned the FQHCs, but I think it also allowed for OBOT, did it not?
The talks about OBOT, so okay. I'll go into that one real quick, and that was the next one on my list. So Senate Bill 1938 and House Bill 1980 is the other piece of very similar, and that's exactly what Debbie just described. This allows nurse practitioner physician assistants who work in licensed OBOTs to prescribe buprenorphine for the purpose of medication-assisted therapy. So the limitations and the supervision requirements are similar, but just a little bit different. Again, the physician who's supervising has to have the data waiver. The practitioner, so the nurse practitioner or the physician assistant, must also have an active data waiver. So in this particular bill, the supervising physician can only supervise two nurse practitioners or physician assistants, but the prescriber can write patients to 100 or fewer. So the capacity in the of the supervision is the same. It's just ordered a little bit differently. So we have in the bill related to community health centers and FQHCs, you have four nurse practitioners or physician assistants who can write to 50 or fewer. In this particular bill with licensed OBOTs, you have two, but they can write to 100 or fewer. This bill actually goes a step further too, and does not allow or prohibits going forward the use of cash only prepaid credit cards or gift cards for the payment of services at OBOTs, and requires licensed OBOTs to be credentialed and seek reimbursement through TennCare. So those are pretty big changes all the way around, and the payment method also changes through that. So like I said before, these are bills that will hopefully increase access to MAT throughout the state and treatment for individuals. And this is, a big change that wasn't allowed previously, and, again, we're the last state to allow activity to happen. The next item, Senate Joint Resolution 181, again, this is not a bill, but a policy statement by the General Assembly to increase parity, removing prior authorization requirements for reimbursement for healthcare professionals trying to seek medication-assisted treatment, and asking that those that are insured are treated in the same manner as individuals that have other diseases like diabetes and heart disease. So again, the bill is a resolution, and it's a policy statement rather than something that changes the law. So again, that's Senate Joint Resolution 181. Under the health or insurance related legislation on page 3, you'll see that a couple of programs that are administered by the TennCare were extended: the Cover Kids program, the Access Tennessee Health Insurance program, and then Bill 2022, House Bill 2170, now public chapter 642, the Annual Coverage Assessment Act that hospitals use to provide funding and draw down federal funding through TennCare to provide much needed funding to the state and to hospitals. Under state government related legislation, the first item, Senate Bill 1655, House Bill 1733, you'll see that the Board of Social Work licensure was extended. The state has a governmental review statute that requires all governments, state agencies, all boards, commissions, advisory councils, they go through a review process, and departments actually in the midst of that, but the Board of Social Work licensure was extended this session through law 2026. Moving on to the criminal justice, juvenile justice related, Senate Bill 2734, House Bill 2517 revises several provisions related to testing for convictions of sales of controlled substances in the drug-free school zones. A lot of folks that are interested in criminal justice reform, I think, will be interested in taking a look at this bill that adjusts a lot of the minimum sentence requirements if something is sold in a drug-free school zone. So wanted to highlight that. And then I think that is the last bills that I want to highlight. So I'm happy to take any questions, again, about the legislative session in general or about a bill on this list.
Any questions for Zach?
Zach, are those posted collectively somewhere to read over, or will that will those be available in the meeting notes?
So the on our department's website, if you go to the footer of the website, there's a section that says "Stay Informed," and underneath that, you'll see the 2020 legislative summary that's published. And also, this should have been sent, I believe, to the members of this region previously. So hopefully you have a copy to take a look at.
Kimberly, we'll look and see. It could have got lost in my bunch of emails, but we'll make sure that gets out.
Yeah, I may have it, Debbie. I might have just missed it. Thank you so much, Zach.
You're very welcome.
Kurt, while we have you on the phone, anything you would like to share with us?
Hey, guys. No, I think Zach did a great job of talking about the legislative update. Of course, we have a special session coming up here next Monday that's going to deal with telemedicine and COVID liability and some penalties for some things. I think Office of Research, just to go through my division, is working hard on gathering together a lot of the stuff for federal reporting that will come up. And then obviously Avis, Kirby, and Amy are working very hard supporting the regional councils as they meet. And we have our statewide planning and policy council meeting on the 11th, I believe. And everything's going great. I think I would like to thank Debbie for being one of the providers that brought the LEADAC situation to
you guys
our attention.
Great.
And what'd you say?
I said you were great.
Well, I have to give a lot of credit to the Department of Health and to the Governor's Council's office. They quickly grasped the seriousness of the situation and the Executive Order 55 that was issued last week, I think, was addressed those issues head on, and I'm very thankful for that.
Wow.
That's the only update I have.
Hey, Kurt and Debbie and Zach. I just got a message in the chat box from Henry Moore. The question was there any provision made for LMSWs being able to help with counseling during COVID-19?
Can you tell me what LMSW
is? It's licensed master social worker, so not an LCSW, not a licensed clinical social worker. It's just a master's of social work that has a license but not a clinical license.
I think if you go and look, Henry, go back and look through the executive orders on the Secretary of State's website. There's a couple of things that might impact you. One is going to be a master's level but unlicensed social worker, or any profession that deals with the behavioral health field that's at a master's or doctoral level, but is yet unlicensed, they have the ability to engage in telehealth, telemedicine. So there's that. My understanding, Henry, is take a look of the current telehealth, telemedicine law is that in Title 63, -1-155, they kind of lay out the authorization for who can do health and telemedicine. Now, that's separate than who is who's required to be paid for it. That's in a different title, in the insurance title. But as far as who can do it in the state, it speaks specifically to those licensed under Title 63 and our state crisis providers. So I would take a look at that, then take a look at what your license has authority under, and you can probably piece it together there. I don't want to say for sure, and if you need a definitive answer, you might want to go and talk to the health-related board that you are licensed through. So that would be my advice.
All right. I apologize. The business office is blowing up my phone. All right. Anything else on that? And I can't, again, on behalf of LADAC and licensed treatment centers, that was a big win, and we appreciate that. All right. Kirby, you're up with updates.
All right. Let's see here. Just a few updates we have from the department. So Debbie, Amber, Sherry, you'll get an email about this first update. I just kind of wanted to have it on your radar as well. Since the joint annual report is just around the corner, I can't believe it. Feels like I just worked on the last one. So each year, a joint annual report is produced and delivered to the governor and state legislature that lists accomplishments, challenges, and plans for the future. It's a collaborative effort between the department, regional planning and policy councils, and the statewide planning and policy council. So I'm needing information from the Region 5 Planning and Policy Council for the FY 2020 joint annual report. So that's July 1, 2019 through June 30th, 2020. If you can send that information to me no later than September 18th via email, that would be great. And like I said, I'll send out another reminder email probably the beginning of next week. Year two of FY 2021 of the three-year plan is in progress. Regional councils will have an opportunity to review within the coming weeks. Development of the FY 2021 mental health block grant is underway. I believe Ava sent that out to regional chairs yesterday around 3:30. So Debbie and Amber, if you don't mind to share that with your regional council so they have an opportunity to review and ask any questions. 2020 legislative summary is completed, been posted to the department website, as Zach just mentioned. I have the link here in my minutes, and Sherry, I'll send you a copy of these after the meeting for your minutes. The department is receiving a $2 million federal grant to provide additional services in response to COVID-19 over the next 16 months. The funding will be used to bolster the state's existing crisis services continuum, behavioral health safety net, and substance abuse treatment and recovery services. The department's grant proposal included a comprehensive implementation approach, which includes 5 facets: assessment, capacity, planning, implementation, and evaluation. Services will be planned, developed, and delivered with a special focus on telehealth treatment to ensure statewide availability. The department is also receiving almost $1 million from the federal government to support the mental health needs of Tennesseans living through the COVID-19 pandemic. The grant for $966,380 is through the FEMA Crisis Counseling and Training Program. The funding will provide outreach and support services in all 95 Tennessee counties. Department staff will be working with community behavioral health agencies to deliver these services. And lastly, Tennessee's healthcare workers and first responders who are on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic response have a new resource to reach out to about feelings of stress, anxiety, sadness, or depression related to work. The COVID-19 emotional support line for healthcare workers is available to call at 888-642-7886. The support line is a collaborative project among the Mental Health Active Response Team, otherwise known as MHARP, the Tennessee Association of Alcohol, Drug, and Other Addiction Services, also known as CADIS, the National Association of Social Workers, Tennessee Chapter, and the department. Specially trained mental health professionals who answer calls through the line can provide emotional support through active listening, help callers identify and address basic needs, and provide reference tools for managing stress and making a plan for self-care. It is important to note the support line does not offer mental health treatment, and it is not intended to replace mental health crisis or suicide prevention services. And that's what I have.
Hi, could you please repeat that phone number again, please?
Thank you. Sure, absolutely. Hold on one moment. I just closed it out. Hold on. It is 888-642-7886.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Kirby or Avis?
I don't have anything to add, but just thank you and the Region 5 council members. As always, Debbie, you do a fabulous job, you and Amber and Sherry, leading this council, so we appreciate you. No other things to add that my colleagues didn't already say.
All right. We are lacking, and somebody will have to refresh my memory because my agenda didn't. I thought we came up with a chair for the adult and the children's committee. Did we not? I'm trying to refresh my memory. Huh?
We did not. We've thrown it out to people, but nobody's jumped on it at the moment.
Okay. That is part of, as I understand it, that's part of the requirement for the council. Wondered if there is anyone who would like to step up and to be that. While you're thinking, I am going to go on to the coalitions for any reports our coalitions out in Region 5 might have that they would need to or want to share. I know, Kimberly, you're on, so what's going on in Maury County? Did we lose her? I'm trying to look at this board here. Okay.
Hey, Debbie, I don't see her on the call. She may have had a step off.
I didn't either. That's why I was scanning the thing.
One thing I wanted to say, though, too, so the Adult Children Subcommittees for East Regional Council, that's something that we added as a part of our three-year plan, as we wanted to encourage those subcommittees within each regional council. We know, especially during this time, it can be difficult to create a committee and then gather the committee. So, you know, there's some flexibility there. I know a lot of the councils right now, they have these established subcommittees, but they haven't been able to meet as they had before. Some have been meeting via Zoom or WebEx. So I just want you to know, you know, you have flexibility there. It's just if you have any interest in being a part of the adult committee or being part of the children's committee, if you have, you know, a special interest towards advocating for the mental health and substance abuse needs for each of those populations, reach out to Debbie. If you have any questions about what that looks like, feel free to email me as well, and I'll be happy to talk with you about it.
I'd like, since there's no coalition speaking up, I would like to just throw this on the floor. It's a highly stressful time right now. One, you don't get to meet face to face, and we know that brings a power in and of itself. when we're all together and we can bounce things off one another. I think we've all pretty much adjusted well to having to do meetings like this. But I'd like to know from each of you what you're doing to take care of yourself, and what are you doing to try to support those that may work for you or with you. So I'd like to throw that out on the table, because this is a highly stressful time, and we want to try and be there for you when we can, but if we don't know it, we can't help.
I can go first. This is Adrienne from Mental Health Co-op. Can you all hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
So with my self-care, I utilize PTO as much as I possibly can. And I just really spend time with my family. I'm not from Middle Tennessee, so I go back home to visit my family as often as I can. For my team, what I'm doing is I do a self-care corner every Monday in our team meeting. And in that space, they're allowed to, like, release anything that's been bothering them. But I also provide them with, like, different activities and coping skills that, like, highly encourage self-care. And so that's what I've been doing, to, like, as a team lead, to check in with my team, but also give them the tools to help them improve their self-care.
Can you give us an example of one of those activities?
Let me think of some. So we have been seeing a lot of our team seem to be burning out. So I'm doing a series on how to recognize burnout, and how you can utilize different, like, PTO, or maybe, like, making a to-do list to, like, kind of help with the burnout. So I'm doing that series now. So as soon as I finish that series, I can definitely pass on any information that I find to the email group if y'all would like.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I can definitely do that. I'm gonna be on PTO for the rest of this, for this week and next week. So whenever I get back and start the series, I will definitely send that out to you guys.
Okay. What else?
Hi, this is Kara Cherish calling from Clarksville, and there is a free app called COVID Coach that anybody can download. It's free. The VA, the Veterans Administration, designed it. It's a great free online app that staff could use and clients alike. It's a wonderful tool that just came out, but I'm a big believer in stress reduction, and I have a list of like 100 free things that one can do, because even with our staff, we have to take care of ourselves personally, not just looking out for them, but what are we doing, you know? But that COVID Coach is a great online app, and I would highly recommend that.
All right. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Others?
Hey, this is Amber Hampton from Mental Health America. So one of the things that our team has been doing is we've been doing daily check-ins via Teams. And what that looks like is we have everybody post their gratitude list. So they share 3 to 5 things that they're thankful for every single day. And at the end of the week, we do a drawing for something fun, just to kind of keep people thinking about the things that they're grateful for, because we know that that's a really great coping skill. We also do like team shout outs and that type of thing on a regular basis. I've been doing one-on-one meetings with everybody from my team once a week, just checking in, seeing them face to face, because a lot of them don't have any face to face contact with anyone right now. And so it just gives them the opportunity to see somebody else that's an actual human, and that way I just check in with them just to make sure that there's not anything additional that I can do to support them, and just make sure that everybody still feels engaged.
You know, that does all sound good. I'm sitting here and thinking as you're talking about these, the self-care corner, the app, the COVID Coach app, and then earlier with what you said, Amber, about posting gratitudes, and at the end of the week, for all those who shared, you do your drawing for something fun. I have to tell you, for me, I am so overwhelmed. I don't know that I could follow that to help my staff, and that really sounds bad. But you've given me some ideas that I'll try and look at, and at least pass them on to the site managers. They would probably have a better chance of dealing with that than I would, obviously. But we have found, we've had several clients who have tested positive. We've had a lot more staff who have tested positive. And it really hit hard in trying to deal with everybody's emotions of, you got to keep the doors open. You still got to deliver the services. People are dying. And you are the key to helping them not to die. And sometimes I think at my level, we often forget that those site managers also need that backup support. So thank you for helping me to realize that this morning. I wish I could offer something, but I can't. Anybody else? I received a text while we were talking here, so bear with me just a minute because it's pertinent to this meeting. Marianne, are you still on the phone? You are, aren't you? I see you here. Marianne sent me a thing and said that she was definitely interested in serving on the subcommittee. But like a lot of us right now, there's so much going on that she doesn't want to spread herself thin. So, Kirby, thank you for that temporary out, if you will, and the department recognizing that there's a whole lot going on out here in the field. And Sherry, if you will, make sure that you follow up with Marianne.
Will do.
But Marianne, thank you for reaching out and sending me that text. I really appreciate it.
Debbie, this is Avis. One of the things too I wanted to share with the council, I work with Region 3 on this same issue that you are having.
We lost you, Avis.
Here I am. The mute button, I pushed it off and then it went back on. I don't know, it has a mind of its own. I work with Region 3 on this issue. They were having a hard time, not with necessarily getting a chair and co-chair, but trying to meet outside of the regular scheduled council meeting. Didn't have a lot of participation, so they really were struggling with that. And so after talking with them briefly a couple of times, one of the things that did help, now it's a little bit different now with the pandemic, the COVID-19 situation, so a lot of people have not been meeting, as Kirby talked about, and so we understand that and are given some grace with that. But one of the things that they have implemented is actually having those subcommittees meet during the actual council meeting. So, or putting on the agenda the adult and children's committee topics to discuss during the meeting. It is most helpful probably when you actually are able to meet in person again. But in the meantime, you can think about two things. One, putting those topics on the agenda to discuss, even if you don't have a per se chair, so that that information can still be discussed, and resources and ideas and dialogue can still be done during the course of the actual council meeting. And when the opportunity presents itself, when we're able to meet in person again, if outside of that meeting, you don't have enough participation or you're trying to build the membership, you may want to carve out some time of that hour and a half to 2 hour meeting for them to do breakout sessions to discuss pertinent issues. So that's another option. Region 3 implemented that, and it seemed to be working very well before the pandemic hit when they could meet in person.
All right, thank you, and I'll probably be following up with you some more on that one, Aiden. Any announcements? Anything else from the floor? Do we have anything from, I only see Kubra. Kubra, do you have anything you would like to share with us?
Yes, I can update you on our quarterly report. Let me pull it up. I checked it on my screen. As you all know, United Healthcare Community Plan expanded telehealth with 10 care guidance all over Tennessee. We increased the support to providers who needed to transition between patients between levels of care. I'm reading this. And I send these notes to Sherry. And also, we have been providing UHC food box delivery in targeted food deserts in Tennessee. And also, we've been holding weekly leadership calls with provider leadership, TAMHO, the department, and PennCare to address COVID response, care barriers, and methods to ensure access to care. So we're doing our best.
Okay.
And if you have any questions regarding any kind of services, any questions about billing or anything, email me. I will get you the appropriate person to answer your questions.
Thank you. Anything from anyone else? Hey, Kurt, there was one question that I did have. I know that the governor's calling the General Assembly back in. And I think you said something about, can you restate what their intent is going to be?
Yeah, no problem. The special session, they're going to be handling three things. One is they're going to be looking at limiting COVID liability for certain businesses. One of the governor's executive orders recently was to provide some liability protection for COVID to the health fields, and I think they're looking to go broader than that. The second one is to deal with the issues around telehealth or telemedicine. And then the third one had to do with increasing penalties for, I believe it was something around monuments and state facilities, that kind of stuff. So we'll see what form all three of those things take. The department will be monitoring very closely the first two, the COVID liability and the telehealth. That's what they're doing. They're supposed to go back August 10th. I don't know how long they'll stay, but keep your ears peeled and eyes peeled for news updates, that kind of stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Anything else? If there's not anything else, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn. This is Mary Ann.
Thank you, Mary Ann. Is there a second?
I'll second. This is Clark.
Hey, Clark.
All right.
And Sherry, did you get that Clark was here?
I just heard that. Kirby, did you say you were going to check and see if there was any others that added on since we took roll at the beginning?
Yeah, if there's anybody else that's joined the call since we took roll at the beginning, please state your name. We got you, Clark.
All right. On a motion and a second, all in favor. I can't say what I used to say in this vote with your feet. I guess I'll say vote with your mouth. And our next meeting is, I got to find it on the right piece of paper, November the 5th. We anticipated it will be this way, but you will get instructions later on.
Well, Joey, we have Kimberly Ladd who's going to be presenting at our next meeting in November on ACEs trauma.
Oh, great. All right. So that's good. So please stay safe. If you need anything, call Avis and Kirk. They got it. And Kirk. They got it. They can handle it.
We can, Debbie. You know we can.
I know it. I ain't worried about it. I just pick up the phone and call you.
Avis and Amy and Kirby do a great job. They keep me in line.
They keep, well, somebody needs to. So I will say goodbye. Please stay safe. Please take care of yourself and those closest to you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Debbie.
Bye-bye.
Cherry.
Bye-bye. Thank you, guys. Bye.